Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to this Tuesday edition of the Horn. It should have been preceded. I will let you know by a Monday edition, but there was no Monday edition because the internet crashed here, as it sometimes does. I wish it didn't, but it does. Nonetheless, we have a Tuesday edition, and then tomorrow night, big fun. John Fox filling in for me from his studio. Somewhere out past a court of kangaroos in the wilds of the outback in Australia. Nah, not really. John's in New South Wales. But John will be filling in for me tomorrow evening. And then, on Thursday and Friday, a real treat. Here's how it shakes out. I will be on the road tomorrow. But on Thursday morning, I will get up bright and surly. And I do mean surly. And we'll get all the equipment set up. And beginning at 9 a.m., Rick Smith will take the microphone. And he will have interviews and fascinating information coming to you live from the Families USA Conference in Washington, D.C. from 9 to noon. Then I'll take over from noon to 3. And then, and you haven't heard from him for a while, but I don't imagine he's lost a lick. I'm sure he's just out there right ahead of the beat like he always was. Guy James will be behind the microphone from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Then at 6 p.m. on Thursday, and the same will obtain on Friday, we will rerun my show, we'll rerun Guy's segment, and Rick will be rerun. It should be, all in all, very, very cool. So that's the plan. I'm going to get out of here pretty early in the morning. I've got some stuff to attend to, but I'll be out of here fairly early in the morning and on my way to D.C. Hope to meet up with Guy and Rick sometime tomorrow evening. That's at least the plan. And then, like I said, this time slot will be filled tomorrow evening. It will be in the capable hands of John Fox coming to you live from Australia. You'll have to tune in because he's got different phone numbers. Don't worry, they're not necessarily, well, I think there's an Australian number and there's a U.S. number. But I think he's going to have Skype set up, all kinds of cool stuff. So by all means, check that out beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow evening. Now, yesterday would have been Moran Monday, and but for the fact that our interweb tubes here were behaving like Morans, we would have had a real good time. Tomorrow is prayer meeting Wednesday. So that kind of and this is my only time to sit and, you know, talk, do conversation radio with y'all this week. And with that in mind, I figure that tonight will be sort of a hybrid between Moran Monday and prayer meeting Wednesday, and we'll get it all started with a little something to commemorate, albeit a day late, the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. National Holiday, which was observed yesterday. See, I'm already out of sync. It was observed yesterday. We got it. Yeah. Okay. No, we're going to start out, and I think Sandra sent this along to me, and it's apparently going around a little bit. There's several iterations of it on the interweb tubes. This is worth listening to. This is a mashup between Willard Romney, the son of an illegal immigrant. That's what they like to call them, you know, illegals. And Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Now, just listen. Because the choices could not be more clear or more stark. You pick which side you wish to be on. For me, it was pretty easy. If you want to find this for later viewing, it's at YouTube. Martin Luther King debates Mitt Romney. Here we go.
That it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages.
The country already has a leader who divides us with the bitter politics of envy. We have to offer an alternative vision. I stand ready to lead us down a different path where we're lifted up by our desire to succeed, not dragged down by a resentment of success.
Now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes. Anyone who has questions about the distribution of wealth and power in this country is envious? Is it about jealousy or is it about fairness?
You know, I think it's about envy. I think it's about class warfare.
America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. The real question is whether we have the will.
He wants to turn America into a European-style social welfare state, fundamentally transform America.
But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness.
I believe in America. I believe in the opportunity and in the freedom that is American. Opportunity and freedom. I believe in free enterprise and capitalism. I believe government is too big.
We spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam.
He doesn't see the need for overwhelming American military superiority.
While we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor.
I will insist on the military so powerful no one would ever think of challenging it.
Promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home.
It's a very envy-oriented, attack-oriented approach, and I think it'll fail. My dad marched with Martin Luther King.
I saw my father march with Martin Luther King.
There is just one problem, however. It never happened.
Yeah, really. It never happened. Credit to Katie Halper, who apparently put that video together, Katie Halper, and did a magnificent job. It is, it's pretty obvious where the lines are drawn in this country. And I don't want to be on the same side as Willard Romney. I don't want to be on the same side with someone who thinks that there is something wrong with wanting all Americans to be able to taste from the font of liberty and freedom. He does. He and apparently that Osmond looking kid standing behind him in those videos from Iowa or New Hampshire or wherever, looks like an Osmond, got a mouth full of teeth. I don't know who that kid is. He was just sitting there grinning like a fox eating it. Well, never mind. With this latest round of pious baloney that emanated from the state of South Carolina last night, South Carolina doing everything we can to destroy the Union since the Union's inception. That's probably a little too long to put the motto on the license plate, though, isn't it? The hostility, the open hostility toward poor people and people of color that is radiating out from the Republican candidates and their base with the heat of a thousand suns is now in full flower. For instance, let's go back to Willard Romney again. Why not?
Governor Romney, your father was born in Mexico. You still have family there. Yet you have taken the hardest line.
Uh-oh. Juan Williams done stepped in it. He just pointed out that Willard's daddy was born in Mexico. He didn't go so far as to mention the fact that Willard's daddy entered the country illegally, because Willard was a polygamist who had fled. Willard's daddy, Willard's granddaddy was a polygamist Mormon who had fled the United States to Mexico so he could continue to have umpteen bajillion wives. You know, it's just fact. I love the way it was described. I've got this video is posted over at Crooks and Liars. And the writer there, simply going by David, says, in a report last week, NBC revealed that Romney's great-grandfather, Miles Park Romney, had fled to Mexico with other Mormons to escape persecution for polygamy. Can we have a little moment here? It wasn't persecution. The state, the territory of Utah, in order to become a state, had to forswear polygamy and adhere to the Constitution of the United States. And thereby declared polygamy and bigamy. You know, I've got two wives and it's mighty bigamy. To be illegal. Declaring polygamy and bigamy illegal is not persecution. Persecution is what the Mormons did to the folks who didn't want to be Mormon in Utah, as well as the people who had been living there for the last 10, 15, 20,000 years, who the Mormons didn't feel were really quite human. Or if they were, they were only human because they were secret Jews who somehow, they were members of the Lost Tribe of Israel, who had somehow hitchhiked, rode, swum, flown, whatever, from the Middle East to North America. Yeah, I know, it still doesn't work for me, but you know, they still believe that crap. But the business about, in a report last week, NBC revealed, bull! Bull! We've known about this for eons. NBC didn't reveal anything. That sentence, with all due respect to the author there, should actually probably be revised and read something like, in a report last week, NBC caught up, NBC, a member of the for-profit 1% media, caught up with people who are actually informed in the world and noted that Romney's great-grandfather, yada, 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 yada. But, you know, that kind of happens all the time here on the Horn. I had a, while the interweb tubes were down last night, I had a tweet. And it was a really cool tweet from John. And John noted, Daily Show crowd gasps in horror at conditions at Foxconn. Now, I know this is not the same story as the Romney story, but it's similar. It's the same principle. Daily Show crowd gasps in horror at conditions at Foxconn. Old news to us. Get your education. Head on RadioNetwork.com. Hashtag ahead of curve. It's just where we live. So lo and behold, them good, upstanding, fine, God-fearing Christian, not Mormon, repeg-lickins there in the back of the hall with Juan Williams talking about Willard Romney's Mexican granddaddy. What's the lyric to the song? I wish I was in Tijuana eating barbecued iguana. Yeah, well, okay, anyway. Back of the hall crowd booed when Juan Williams brought up Willard's Mexican heritage. But that whole thing was just a carnival of the weird, to wit.
Of anyone on this stage on immigration reform, including opposition to key parts of the DREAM Act, which is supported by 80% of Latinos in this country. Are you alienating Latino voters that Republicans will need to win the general election?
You know, now, I haven't sent off my 59 cents to get my certificate suitable for framing and my secret decoder ring from the Juan Williams fan club, and that's about as mild as you could put that question and not have Rupert Murdoch just reach down from the sky with his intergalactic lightsaber and lop your little head right off. But yeah, he's kind of pointing to something here. Apparently the Repiglickens, and in this case Willard in particular, have decided that the way to get votes is to demonize poor folks, brown folks, you know, in other words, just be Republicans. Tell us how you really feel, please, Willard.
I think Latino voters, like all voters in this country, are interested in America being an opportunity nation. People come here because they believe they want to have a brighter future, and that's been the story of America. The president looks out across the country and says it could be worse. I can't believe saying that. The American people recognize it's got to be better. In my view, as long as we communicate to the people of all backgrounds in this country that it can be better and that America is a land of opportunity, we'll get those votes. Now, with regards to immigration policy, I absolutely believe that those who come here illegally should not be given favoritism or a special route to becoming permanent residents or citizens that's not given to those people that have...
Did I miss something? Because I'm fairly familiar with the DREAM Act. Is there anything about giving special privileges or... No. Actually, it's a matter of lifting an undue burden from people who never had any hand in bringing the burden upon themselves. In other words, it's part and parcel of the creed that Willard sort of adheres to, and Christianity kind of once in a while, if somebody's white, adheres to. No, but... So when in doubt, I guess the rule is, when in doubt, make crap up if you're a Repiglican, right? This thing goes on and on and on. And I listened to it a couple of times. And you know what? I'm going to make you listen to it, too. Because while I'll get emails saying, oh, Bob, I don't want to... You know what? There's only one way to fully grasp the nastiness that inhabits the soul of the Republican Party, and that is to let them tell you about it.
Stayed in line legally. I just think we have to follow the law. I think that's the right course. And
clap, you pasty people, clap!
And I've indicated I would veto the DREAM Act if provisions included in that act say that people who are here illegally, if they go to school here long enough, get a degree here, that they can become permanent residents. I think that's a mistake. I think we have to follow the law. And
well, no, they don't need to be getting degrees here. We need a slave class. Can't technically do that under the 13th Amendment anymore, but we can certainly do it with paychecks and stuff, right? Just as an aside, just to give you a little snippet of what life is like around here in the economic paradise of coal-fired West Virginia. This has nothing to do with coal. The interweb tubes came up about 8:10 last night, came back. And so I was trying to make the best of the time by working with John Fox to make sure that our rig is all ready to go for the big deal on Thursday and Friday. No one more than me, unless perhaps it's Guy, no one hates having technical difficulties on a live remote more than I do. Okay, I think Guy, Rick, and I all hate such things equally. So, John and I are just beginning to do some tech work when the phone rings, and lo and behold, and by now it's 10 o'clock. Interweb tubes came back on 8:10. John and I start working. A little after 10, the phone rings, and a guy says, "Hi, this is so-and-so from so-and-so, and I'm here to pick up your wrecked truck." At 10 after 10 at night, right? I mean, that's... And I told him where I was and everything and walked out. I said, "Man, why are you doing this at night? I mean, around here, people shoot first and don't ask questions later. They just shoot first." Agnes was, in point of fact, headed back here for the family 12-gauge. Someday I'll tell you the story about Agnes and the 9mm, but not tonight. So the guy says, "Well, I don't know why we haven't come and picked your truck up since." And this is the truck that the guy wrecked by slamming into Agnes and my son, you know, doing full highway speeds and, you know, right. So I kind of made peace with the whole process, and I know that my truck is going away, and you know, there's a lot of history there, and yes, I suppose it is possible to build relationships with inanimate objects. So he comes out, and the guy's walking around, introduces himself, and tells me this story. I said, "Yeah, why are you doing this at 10 o'clock? He said, "Buddy, I get paid $400 a week, no matter how little or how much I work. Most weeks I log more than 80 hours. I figured it out. It works down to less than $4 an hour. My boss called me a couple of hours ago and told me to come get your truck from a place that's about 100 miles away. And he said, I told him my wife was at work. She works at 3 to 11. I told him my wife was at work and I was watching the children and I didn't have a sitter. And he said, well, then you're fired. And I said, what? And he said, yeah, you're fired. You're done. Don't come to work. And the young man was obviously intelligent, well-spoken, knew what he was talking about, you know, decent guy. Doesn't do repos, just does salvage pickups for insurance companies. And he said, so I had to scramble around and find a sitter for my kids. He said, my wife will be home from work in about an hour and a half. And he said, I'll be lucky to get home by 2, and I'll have to be back at work at 7. You know what? That will make an old man of you fast. Goes on and tells me the story about it, and suddenly it becomes clear why it is he's out in the middle of the night. He said, and he already had one car on his car hauler, on his flatbed. And he was supposed to, you can kind of put another one up above it, and there was no way that was, but that truck was huge of money. And he says, my boss has a brand new year-old rollback. And he said, they told me that they'd been paying whatever the money was. And that would have meant that they were about a year ahead on payments. He said, but yesterday they came and repoed the boss's rollback. And I looked at him and said, well, we understand why you're out at 10 o'clock at night now, don't we? He's trying to scrounge up every last penny he can get. I said, don't be surprised if maybe he's a little late with your paycheck this week. I said, brother, you need a union. So I let him go on and get about his business and so forth. But that's what it means to work in a nation where the value of labor has been intentionally devalued by conservatives, by Republicans, by libertarians. In a deliberate effort to make people who work for a living do so in a state of abject desperation and fear. It was wet last night. It was dark. Shoot, I wouldn't have driven from here downtown 2 miles to get a bottle of pop. And here's this guy out at 10:30 at night, making $400 a week, working 80 plus hours a week, with God knows who looking after his kids, and waiting for his wife to get home from the healthcare facility where she works. Bet you a dime to a donut, he doesn't have health care. Now, how does that play into the Republican philosophy being espoused by Willard Romney?
Insist that those that have come here illegally ultimately return home, apply, get in line with everyone else. I want people to know I love legal immigration. We're almost all of us in this room are descendants of immigrants or are immigrants ourselves. Our nation is stronger and more vibrant by virtue of a strong legal immigration system. I welcome that. But to protect our legal immigration system, we have got to protect our borders and stop the flood of illegal immigration, and I will not do anything that opens up another wave of illegal immigration.
So, the DREAM Act addresses people who were children when their parents came here, who had no choice in the matter, who would like to follow in the footsteps of the American dream where one generation does a little bit better than the generation before. And Willard Romney doesn't like that. Willard Romney doesn't like for the children of immigrants to go to college. He doesn't want to create that space whereby they can contribute their talents, their energies to the ongoing experiment that is what is left, tattered and torn though it may be, of the American dream. And did you hear the applause he gets over it? Yeah, let's be mean to some dark-skinned people. Hoo-ah! America, hot diggity! David in Tennessee noting good advice for that tow driver. And by the way, tough way to make $400 a week. Sheesh. But whether you are the children of immigrants of any classification, or whether you are a working stiff in coveralls at 10:30 at night trying to find a wrecked Dodge truck in the middle of nowhere, the Republican plan is desperation, pure and simple. Fear and desperation. Fear and desperation and anxiety. Fear, desperation, anxiety, and more fear. Fear, desperation, anxiety, more fear. You get the idea. So, a little bit more, please. Listen, clapping crackers.
You recently said black Americans should demand jobs.
Now, here's where it gets really fun. This is Juan Williams. You may have already heard it by now. This is Juan Williams querying Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich and his big old head about the fact that the guy sneers down his pasty-faced, doughy nose. Now, be respectful, Bob. You'd like to have a nose like that full of nickels, wouldn't you? Yeah. And you know what? Newton Leroy Gingrich is not going to take a bunch of stuff.
Work ethic and
hang on,
protect our borders and stop the flood of illegal immigration, and I will not do anything that opens up another wave of illegal immigration.
Speaker Gingrich, you recently said black Americans should demand jobs, not food stamps. You also said poor kids lack a strong work ethic and propose having them work as janitors in their schools. Can't you see that this is viewed at a minimum as insulting to all Americans, but particularly to black Americans?
No, I don't see that.
Oh, did you hear that?
Who started a donut company at 11. He's now 16. He has several restaurants to take his donuts. His father's thrilled that he's 16 because he can now deliver his own donuts.
Yeah, and all his payday's going to the insurance money, too.
Joe Klein reminded me that this started with an article he wrote 20 years ago. New York City pays their janitors an absurd amount of money because of the union. You could take...
Right. New York City pays an absurd amount of money to janitors because of the union. Not because being a janitor is a tough job. Not because being a janitor has intrinsic values. Not because being a janitor is not just some broom-pushing job, but is actually a skilled position that involves a certain degree of knowledge that is gained over the course of years of dedication and service. No, they pay lots of money because of the unions. But you know what? If they pay lots of money because of the unions, then good. Good, Newton. Good. Because in the world that Newton Leroy Gingrich would have us all live, we would all be living that hand-to-mouth existence of anxiety and fear and desperation. So once again, here's the question by Juan Williams. Just saying, mind you. Here's the question by Juan Williams about Newton Leroy Gingrich and his big old heads, at best, condescending attitude toward persons of color in this country. And what does Newt start talking about? Nuclear physicists! No. Brain surgeons! Airline pilots? No. Janitors. Ding, 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 ding. Where's Reverbo's bell when I need it? Speaker Gingrich, let's talk about your attitude toward black people. Janitors! But let's let Newt continue.
Take one janitor and hire 30-some kids to work in the school for the price of one janitor, and those 30 kids would be a lot less likely to drop out. They would actually have money in their pocket. They'd learn to show up for work.
Yeah, because, you know, basically, janitors never have children. Did you know that? I didn't know that until I listened to Dr. Newt and Leroy Gingrich and his big old hate. Because he's going to pay 30 children what's being paid to that one janitor. Oh, that just sounds so good, doesn't it? And they're going to take care of their own schools, right?
They could do light janitorial duty. They could work in the cafeteria. They could work in the front office. They could work in the library. They'd be getting money, which is a good thing if you're poor.
Money is a good thing if you're poor. Now, little question. When Tammy Sue, in fourth grade, comes to school the day after Halloween, having gorged herself on Halloween candy the night before, and proceeds to vomit absolutely unimaginably copious quantities onto the classroom floor, which one of Tammy Sue's classmates is going to hear the intercom, we've got a vomit incident in Mrs. Padiddle's fourth grade class. Back there, third row, back seat. Yeah, come get the mop bucket and clean up your classmate's vomit. Yeah, I didn't think so either. But see, that doesn't exist in Newton Leroy Gingrich and his big old head's world. It's a free market miracle, and the children are going to make 1/30th of what a janitor in New York makes. Notice it's not a janitor in Georgia, or given the locus of this here pageant, a janitor in South Carolina. Mm-mm. It's a janitor in New York, because, you know, New York's foreign. It's full of them dark people and with Spanish accents and Haitian accents and saying mon and things like that. And, oh, goodness gracious, that man does not need a job! But wait, he just said it was good for people to have money. Well, it is good for people to have money, just not very much of it. Just not as much as, say, a union janitor in New York City has.
Only the elites despise earning money.
The governor.
What was that? Haben Sie gehabt, hatten geworden sein? No, only the elites despise earning money. No, well, apparently, I have been called from time to time, and proudly so, a hillbilly elitist, but I don't despise earning money. But I despise the notion that all my children are good for is to be put to work instead of studying like the children of the elites do. How many summer jobs did George W. Bush have? Because I don't think you can count the sticking M-80s up the butts of frogs after a hard rain in Texas part. What was his work-study job at Andover when he wasn't cheerleading? Did he work in the cafeteria at Yale? How about Willard Romney? What job did Willard have when he was 13 and the son of the governor of Michigan? Well, he didn't have a job. He was sitting around at the old man's knee being told stories about when George Romney marched with Martin Luther King, but didn't. Well, that sure was a big applause line. Let's see what else Dr. Newt and Leroy Gingrich and his big old hate have to say. Juan, I'd be getting out of there, buddy. That crowd sounded ugly. Just saying. They probably brought their pillowcases with them, buddy.
There's about a lack of work ethic. And I got to tell you, my email account, my Twitter account has been inundated with people of all races who are asking if your comments are not intended to belittle the poor and racial minorities. You saw some of this reaction during your visit to a black church.
Juan. I hope you wore some good running shoes.
You saw some of this during your visit to a black church in South Carolina, where a woman asked you why you refer to President Obama as the food stamp president. It sounds as if you are seeking to belittle people.
Well,
I'm telling you, Juan.
First of all, Juan, the fact is that more people have been...
See, he called him by his first name. Now, Juan Williams refers to him as Speaker Gingrich. Speaker Gingrich refers to him as Juan, and if he keeps pressing the issue, he'll call him boy. See, that's how it works. Juan Williams, who, regardless of what you think of his particular positions and the shilling that he does for Radio Rwanda, has been at his profession for a number of years. Didn't just start doing the journalism gig yesterday when he got fired in favor of 30 preschoolers from his janitor job in New York City. But he is not worthy in the eyes of a filthy old racist gas bag like Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich and his big old head. He is not worthy of being referred to as Mr. Williams. He's Juan. And don't think the use of, did you hear the giggles? Did you hear the giggles when he called it, well, Juan? Of course you did. There's enough dog whistling going on here to drive every dog in the Iditarod deaf. Ooh, shut up, Newt!
Put on food stamps by Barack Obama than any president.
Yeah, here
it is. Food stamp president. It sounds as if you are seeking to belittle people.
Well,
is this a political debate or Jerry Springer?
First of all, Juan, the fact is that more people have been put on food stamps by Barack Obama than...
Put on food stamps by Barack Obama. Hey, you, come here. Come over here right now. I'm a Kenyan Muslim with a deep-seated hatred of white people and an anti-colonialist rhetoric. Come here. Stand still. I'm going to put you... Get out. David Plouffe, get over here. Put him on food stamps right now. Put on food stamps by Barack Obama? This is another one of those moments where we know that there's not really any big smiting the bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, because lies like that, you know, greasy newt spot. Put on food stamps by Barack Obama. Never mind the... And through all of this, and it's more the fault of the for-profit 1% media than it is the fault of these prating coxcombs in these pageants. But not a word dare be mentioned about the fact that the vast majority of the economic crisis this country has weathered was born between January the 20th, 2001, and January the 19th, 2009, which incidentally were not the presidency of Barack Obama. The need for food stamps, because Barack Obama, he put people on food stamps. People didn't want to be on food stamps. People didn't need the food after they'd lost their jobs because of the evil economic chicanery of Republicans going back the last 8 years. Well, hell no! Barack Obama's just running out there putting big food stamp bags over people's heads and making them dependent. Jesus God.
Any president in American history.
See, in a nation that calls itself Christian, that would be lauded as a virtue. Huh? Yeah, really.
More people have been put on food stamps by Barack Obama than any president in American history.
That means less people are effing starving. That apparently Newton Leroy Gingrich and his big old head would just as soon see starve. How can you kink buy just a hell of a lot of groceries on $400 a week at 87 hour weeks? God forbid there should be food stamps there for working people like that. But Newt and Leroy Gingrich and his big old head, they ain't done.
Now, I know among the politically correct, you're not supposed to use facts that are uncomfortable.
Really? Well, let's use a fact that's uncomfortable. The people who went on food stamps since January the 20th, 2009, went on food stamps because they no longer had the ability to adequately feed themselves and their families. Onward to dystopia, noting to me from the chat room, remember, Bob, white people can't do no wrong. It's true.
Second, you were the one who earlier raised the key point. The area that ought to be I-73 was called by Barack Obama a corridor of shame because of unemployment. Has it improved in 3 years? No. They haven't built the road. They haven't helped the people. They haven't done anything.
Wait, what? Okay, let's talk about I-73, but within the context of a question as to whether or not Newton Leroy Gingrich and his big old head are belittling black folks with all these this food stamp dog whistling? Objection, Your Honor. Would you direct the witness to answer the question? Now don't make me call you Juan again! Jerry B.
One last thing, yes, sir. So here's my point. I believe every American of every background has been endowed by their creator with the right to pursue happiness, and if that makes liberals unhappy, I'm going to continue to find ways to help poor people learn how to get a job, learn how to get a better job, and learn someday to own the job.
That man was made of so much straw you could suck milk through him. What a straw man! Well, and if liberals don't believe in what the founders who are like unto gods believe, well, they can kiss my tuchus, my big white tuchus, and my big old Newton Leroy Gingrich head too. And clap! Now, did you hear that? I quoted the Constitution of Independence, because I love America. And how dare you suggest it that I'm belittling black people when you don't even know nothing about I-73? Paul!
Okay.
Yeah, so we started out with some rather stirring words about economic inequality from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. You pick. You pick. Ron and Raleigh writing, Bob, here's the phenomenal amount custodians make in New York City. Evening custodian in New York, $31,000. Custodian substitute in New York, $35,000. Motor vehicle office manager, $68,000. Head custodian in New York, $43,000. Night custodian in New York, $34,000. School custodian in New York. Now, this is exactly what Newton Leroy Gingrich and his big old head were talking about. School custodian in New York, $49,000. Now, we have a sizable and substantial audience in and around New York City. And I invite one and all to let me know, either by phone or by email, you pick, whether one is living the life of Riley at $49,000 per annum in Gotham. Because I'm guessing you're not. And David in Tennessee adding in Yeah, janitors. Not because doing the work of janitor means one faces MRSA every minute of every day. Nope, not that for a living wage buttressed by benefits. Oh, no. Ron and Raleigh. College? We don't need no stinking college. You remember that, don't you, says Ron, that Bro Fromix, when president not sure said all should have a chance to go to college, said that it was elitist of the president to consider such a thing. Yeah. And Marty also noted. And then there's those brain-dead people in the audience applauding. Jim emailing said, well, 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 what did we discuss about cutting off the sapling before it becomes the tree? The same axiom applies to working people in the middle class or upward access. How does this reconcile with FDR's 1942 address? Jim suggested over the weekend that I go and have a look at Franklin D. Roosevelt's 1942 Flag Day speech. And I was awfully glad he did because it was, well, it's still inspiring. And it contains elements that if we paid attention to them today, might manage to solve a lot of problems. It's an address that he gives June 13th, 1942, via news release, calling upon the people of the United States to sacrifice in the ramp up of what had become World War II. He says the four freedoms of common humanity are as much elements of man's needs as air and sunlight, bread and salt. Deprive him of all these freedoms and he dies. Deprive him of a part of them and a part of him withers. Give them to him in full and abundant measure and he will cross the threshold of a new age, the greatest age of man. So very true. 28th April 1942, a call for sacrifice. He talks about what cannot, how the United States cannot be defeated, but what will be required of people in such hard times. He says, yesterday I submitted to the Congress of the United States a 7-point program, a program of general principles which taken together could be called the National Economic Policy for attaining the great objective of keeping the cost of living down. Because, of course, conservation was a watchword, a byword during that time when waste during wartime on the home front very well could have meant death to anyone's beloved son far, far away and daughters in the various theaters of war. FDR said, I repeat them now to you in substance. First, we must, through heavier taxes, oh dear God, first, we must, through heavier taxes, keep personal and corporate profits at a low, reasonable rate. Second, we must fix ceilings on prices and rents. Third, we must stabilize wages. Fourth, we must stabilize farm prices. Fifth, we must put more billions into war bonds. Sixth, we must ration all essential commodities which are scarce. And seventh, we must discourage installment buying and encourage paying off debts and mortgages. I do not think it is necessary to repeat what I said yesterday to the Congress in discussing these general principles. The important thing to remember is that each one of these points is dependent on the others if the whole program is to work. You take that line about war bonds and you change it into an investment in, for instance, a green sustainable economy, and you've got a model for crawling out of what we are presently in. Naturally, it is a hated idea. So here we are at the top of the hour, and so much to go into. And if you want to fill up the phone lines, there's a couple or three yet remaining. You know the number, 304-658-3333 on your nickel or if you need us to pay the freight, toll free 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. Yeah, I remembered the lyric while we were talking about Willard Romney's Mexican roots. I can't resist this. And the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen is on the way. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, January 17, 2012.
You're probably looking at, in the field, from Montana to Houston, I don't mean the hundreds, certainly not in the thousands.
The owners of the pipeline confirm the Republican Fox News lie about Keystone XL jobs. The Italian cruise ship crash, now threatening to become an environmental disaster. Nigeria's newest offshore oil catastrophe, plus...
We do not have any coastal or shoreside infrastructure. We do not have a seasonal base to even hangar our aircraft or to sustain our crews.
Nonetheless, it's full speed ahead for drilling in the Arctic.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
But the thing, sure, you got to remember about greens is that they love animals, but they hate people.
No, we don't. We just hate liars. Jonathan Hoenig of Fox News, you're a liar. But this is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, a tragic situation over the weekend in Europe in this Costa Concordia disaster, but there may also be environmental concerns about the story as well.
Yes, the Costa Concordia cruise ship crash off the Italian coast over the weekend that has already left 11 confirmed dead, dozens still missing, now also threatens to become an environmental disaster as well because the ship was just hours into its voyage at the time of the crash. It was fully loaded with thousands of tons of fuel, which officials warn of appears to be already leaking into the marine sanctuary where the massive ship is now precariously resting on an undersea ledge. We'll have more as that situation develops. But now there are also now two offshore disasters in Nigeria, just weeks after 1.6 million barrels of oil spilled from an undersea pipeline off the coast of Nigeria. Oil giant Chevron announced on Tuesday that two workers are still missing after an explosion and fire engulfed a drilling rig in flames off the coast of Nigeria. Chevron officials say it appears that the fire was caused by a gas kick, a massive plume of natural gas rushing up through the drill pipe, the same cause of the explosion aboard the doomed Deepwater Horizon drilling rig that killed 11 men and caused the BP oil disaster in the Gulf 2 years ago. Meanwhile, deadly riots in Nigeria are subsiding after President Goodluck Jonathan announced on Monday...
President who?
Yes, that is his name, Goodluck Jonathan, announced on Monday that the government would restore partial fuel subsidies for its citizens. The riots began after the government abruptly canceled all fuel subsidies on New Year's Day, putting the price of gasoline well beyond the reach of the majority of Nigerians.
And it led to riots that started to look like Mad Max out there in Nigeria.
Yes, and it appears that Occupy Nigeria operations have succeeded in getting action from the government.
Occupy operations seem to work everywhere, but here in the U.S. Go figure.
Rescue for Nome. A Russian fuel supply ship has finally reached the snowbound town of Nome, Alaska, which has been trapped and running dangerously low on fuel since last November, when a massive historic Arctic hurricane prevented the town from receiving its final pre-winter fuel delivery in what is turning out to be a record winter in Alaska. Despite the situation in Nome demonstrating yet again the difficulties of operating in the harsh extremes of the Arctic, offshore oil and gas drilling is rushing full speed ahead. Oil giant Royal Dutch Shell last week cleared another bureaucratic environmental hurdle to drilling in the Arctic. A federal panel rejected challenges by Alaskan tribes and environmental groups seeking to block Shell from receiving Clean Air Act permits. Arctic drilling is scheduled to begin this summer.
Also, as I recall, the U.S. Coast Guard was against the oil drilling in the Arctic. Weren't they saying that they
and
only
And still are. They only have one icebreaker ship, and it's currently being used.
Well, let's ignore them and listen to the companies. What could possibly go wrong?
Claims by Republicans and their media echo chamber that the Keystone XL pipeline will create 20,000 jobs or more.
Claims like this?
The Keystone project would generate 20,000 immediate jobs.
It would create at least 50,000 jobs.
In total, about 118,000 indirect jobs.
120,000 jobs. Some estimates. It could provide up to a million new high-paying jobs.
20,000 to a million new high-paying jobs, according to Fox News. You're saying that is inaccurate?
Yeah, not so much. At least if you ask the Vice President of TransCanada, the company that wants to build the pipeline, here in an interview by CNN.
You know, the numbers are, you know, literally pummy technicians and such up and down the line. So they're probably looking at, in the field, from Montana to Houston, I don't mean the hundreds. It's certainly not in the thousands because those are construction jobs.
So Fox and the Republicans say 20,000 to a million jobs, but the actual owners of the pipeline say a few hundred at best.
That's right. And as the Natural Resources Defense Council points out, these inflated job claims are actually a bait and switch to distract attention from the fact that the Keystone XL pipeline would actually be an export pipeline, enabling Canada to ship oil to China, resulting in higher gas prices for America.
So very few jobs, and it won't even give us that energy independence from foreign oil that all the Republican candidates have been talking about in arguing for this pipeline?
That's right.
Wow, I'm starting to think they're a bunch of liars, too. For more on all of the stories we covered today and those we did not have time for, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report so that we can keep telling the truth over your public airwaves. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Seven and a half past the hour, just a little bit of email before we go to the back of the phones. This one from Steve in Vermont. Thanks for all the good work. Your callers are the best. See, you guys get more fan mail than I do. Your callers are the best, and I try to listen whenever possible. Vermont was ravaged by floods a few months ago, but we're coming around, and everyone, almost, has pulled together to help those hardest hit. We have a great governor and congressional delegation, and compared to the many other places in the country, we are blessed. You know, it could be that Vermont is responsible for the 11% of people in the United States who actually approve of their of Congress, or at least of their Congress people. Steve notes, Vermont has an aging nuclear plant, the same design as Fukushima, that's trying to continue operations despite radioactive leaks, 100-degree discharge of water into the Connecticut River, undermining the river ecosystem, and being run by a lying, deceitful corporation based in Louisiana, Entergy. Entergy is trying to override the legislature, which has refused to grant the plant a relicensing agreement for 20 more years. Vermont's the only state that has the power to do this. There will be a federal court decision in March. Wish us luck. Oh, much more than luck do I wish you, Steve. And he sent along a quote from 1965, God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, from my hero Kurt Vonnegut. Thus did a handful of rapacious citizens come to control all that was worth controlling in America. Thus was the savage and stupid and entirely inappropriate and unnecessary and humorless American class system created. Honest, industrious, peaceful citizens were classed as bloodsuckers if they asked to be paid a living wage. And they saw that praise was reserved henceforth for those who devised means of getting paid enormously for committing crimes against which no laws had been passed. Thus the American dream turned belly up, turned green, bobbed to the scummy surface of cupidity unlimited, filled with gas, went bang in the noonday sun. We may have to start adding peace be upon him when we mention Kurt Vonnegut's name, too, because that sounds rather prophetic. Jay and Yuma sending this along in commemoration of the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. I have a dream. I dream of a day when the majority of Americans reject religion and Republicans, as the old, white, doughy, pasty-faced men who make up the majority of the Republican Party die off. Their roles will continue to dwindle. As the increasingly younger, browner minorities become the majority, the Republicans will find it harder and harder to curry favor. One need look no further than the disappearance of the Tea Party in less than 2 years to see that the influence of low-information voters from the Christian crazies, gun nuts, racial bigots, et al., has greatly diminished. The Koch brothers and other corporate giants have, for the most part, withdrawn their financial support from this fringe as well. The big money has decided that voter suppression and vote rigging will be more reliable in the long run. Stay tuned, says Jay. Time will tell all. Meanwhile, yesterday in Michigan, there was a message for Governor Snyder they're coming for you. And oh yeah, in Wisconsin, Governor Walker, they're really coming for you. And it's true, they filed something like 1 million signatures today saying, get this louse out of our governor's mansion. That's almost as many votes as he got in the last election. So it looks like there will be a recall election in November. And unless he can figure out a way to rig all of the video game voting that goes on in Wisconsin, Scott Walker, goodbye. David in Tennessee noting, no, Vonnegut? No, not possibly, Bob. Eminently prophetic. So, yeah, Vonnegut gets a peace be upon him after his name now. Just like Bill Hicks. So, there will be more as we go, of course. But for now, let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so, listen, I must get this out of the way because, I guess Tom Brady don't F around. They could have been playing the Darth Vader music for that fool. Shit.
Did you see him on that one touchdown pass when he got knocked down? He was sitting there on the ground and he was pointing at Tebow. He'd just thrown a touchdown pass. That's how we do it around here.
No, it was just, you know, like I said, I'm not a fan, but that just was annihilation. And it did the job because I'm not hearing about it, which is what I wanted.
Well, there is news.
What?
The white slow-moving Bronco that was, Elway?
Right.
Has announced that he doesn't see why Tim Tebow shouldn't be the Denver starting quarterback next year, so that issue's been put to rest.
Well, no, I thought he said for the training camp. Oh, he had moved it to the season?
I don't know. Maybe it. Maybe.
He just said.
Number one in camp.
Yes. No. Elway ain't effing around. He ain't going to close the door on that because it's a joke. I mean, his quarterback rating at the end was 46. He got 46% of his passes for the season. Come on.
Well, and you know that he was 9 for 26 on Saturday, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, you know, I mean, irrespective of whatever irritating about him, I mean, I don't, you know, you can't option your way out in the NFL these days. That ain't gonna work.
No.
So, you know, unless something, you know, drastic happens over the camp, I can understand why Elway is hedging his bets, you know? But anyway, I don't really care.
Yeah, and maybe spend some real quality time with Brady Quinn, too.
Yeah, you know, anyway, I just think...
No, I reveled in it. I mean, you saw, I was sitting there tweeting, you know, since we had John 3:16 for the Steelers game, I went and found Mark 9:26.
Yeah, no, that was hilarious.
And
no,
the spirit just cried out and left him sore so that people thought the boy is dead.
Right. No, I mean, it's just, but, because I was so angry when I saw that horrible ad with those brainwashed children. I'm like, who lets their kids do shit like that, first of all?
Well, anyway, the same people who think that beating a child until he cries real tears is a great idea.
Yeah,
remember, it's the same organization.
Yeah, that was really creepy, though, because I was just sitting there, you know, because I actually had found a way to watch the damn game because I had to see it. And I'm like sitting there alone, and then that pops up. I'm thinking, if I was smoking dope, it would have really, you know, F with my high, if you get my meaning. I don't do those things anymore, so. But, yeah, I was just like, no way. And everybody in the room was like, what? You know, and these people aren't particularly political. They're just like, oh, my God, trying to enjoy a game. So it was a real downer seeing that, you know.
And how much must that have cost?
Yeah, it's gruesome. But anyway, I you know, nevertheless, I, you know, moved on and continued to enjoy. How many touchdowns did fool get? Like five or something?
Yeah, he tied the record. He didn't, because of all the people I would never imagined would have done this, the hoodie put on the brakes.
Yeah, he did, but not before he did that one when it was a second left or something real crazy. I was like, damn. But Hoodie could have ran that shit up, but he did pull back, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't know if he was afraid of karma, but I was sitting there, hot, you know, I'm in the third quarter. Run it up!
I'm going 50, 60. I said, damn, it's 35. Can we get 70? You know. Oh, no. But anyway, it didn't really matter because it ended that little run. That was horrific. But the thing is, though, now, you know, I'm going to have to pull for, you know, I'm going to have to pull for the Niners. I don't like them, but F the Giants.
Oh, you're gonna start a cross continental rivalry, Sandra.
I am, because you know I'm not a big fan of the 49ers, but oh hell no, because that game was off the hook too. Shit.
It was the Packers' rotten luck that they wound up drawing the bracket with the Giants in it, because the Giants did that a couple of years ago too. You may remember. Went in the playoffs and whipped Brett Favre's Packers at home.
Yeah, well, no, but the Packers, they look completely rusty. I'm like, dudes, you know. So, yeah, they was run out. I have to say, I was surprised by that game.
Well, what do you think, Ravens or Pats?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty difficult matchup for the Patriots, actually. So, we'll see. I don't know.
I have no confidence in the Ravens quarterback.
Flacco's a bit defensive. I'm a bit unconcerned about that. Just his chat is not right. He might want to revisit his conversation because he don't sound very convincing anyway. You know, whereas, you know, I'm waiting for Brady to start quoting Benjamin Franklin. He's going to fuck somebody up.
Well, you know, he's human, despite the press to the contrary, and it can't have done his head any good to spend an entire week, and you know, he's Tom Brady, you know, he's got the jewelry, he's got the rings, he's got, you know, everything, and he spends the week listening to that little listening to talk about, you know, the miracle boy from Denver.
Oh no, yeah, no, I mean, you know that they were just seething, and, you know, they kind of just take care of their business. I mean, like I said, and they haven't really been winning all that much anyway, the Patriots, contrary to what people usually think. So, I mean, what was the last time they were at the Super Bowl was 2007, right?
Right, and how did that turn out? Yeah, they lost.
Yeah, they lost to the Giants. So, well, you know, like I said, of course, if the Niners get past the Giants, I'm going to have to go with the Niners if they're playing the Patriots.
Well, I understand that completely, and I probably will, too.
And the thing is,
now I'm going to get hate mail from New England.
But anyway, I really had to clear that up, though, because it was a good weekend for football.
Well, you do not want to see, you know, your eyes will burn, but the one last gasp of Tebowism, you know, it was bad enough when they tried to turn him into Jesus. Now he has signed a deal to hustle underwear for Jockey, maybe, and they've got this photograph, and remember, you know, he's all pure and saving himself for marriage, right? Well, they've got him posed. It's kind of monochromatic, and they've got him posed from the back and airbrushed, I'm sure. And he looks like the back of a Greek statue, and you can't tell me that's a mistake.
Well, that's as they say. Well, never mind. I'm not even gonna say it because I'm getting in trouble. But yeah, I saw that picture. That looked sweet. I'm gonna leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little piece of beefcake.
Yeah, no, that looked like, you know, something out of Tool Driver or something out of, you know, interesting porn that's been around. Yeah, he ain't right, but hey, I guess if he's getting a cut, somebody making a lot of money off his dumb ass.
Oh, plenty, and, you know, he's hustling some power beverage, some athletic power beverage now, and I'm surprised it doesn't have a cross on the label. But.
Oh God! Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm just so happy that their run has come to a sort of nasty in. Listen.
Yeah, and by the way, Ron did say, Ron and Raleigh said, hey, Bob, tell Sandra we don't want a harsher buzz or anything. So, yeah.
Oh, my God. Hey, so, did you see that thing I sent you with Jake Tapper trying to ask a question?
Yeah, he might as well have been asking a tree.
Well, no, but it's interesting, though, that, I mean, you know, because this is the thing that's just doing my head in, is that, you know, the mainstream media is trying to get some answers, and they're still trying to run this, you know...
Signing statement.
No, and it's regretful autocrat shit, and it's just like, no. You know, he asked the question, like, yeah, this is the law. What do you, you know, trying to clarify, at least for the public, that... The signing statement is what you guys are going to do. It doesn't take care of what the law codifies, and that
or what some future president will do.
Right, and he refused to even address it. You know, and I don't know. I just find the whole situation a bit disturbing. And I went back and looked at that whole signing statement, and really, you know, he ought to be ashamed of himself. It's just stunning. It's like. There's no way. I'm thinking Madison must be spinning. You know, I'm looking. You know, is he supposed to be the angel? Because I'm confused. I really thought that, you know, someone like him would be well aware of what the hell he's saying, which is, well, our administration won't detain you, and that should be enough for you.
Well, that's great. You know, under the worst of circumstances, that means there's. A little more than a year of not being detained under this administration, or perhaps a little more than 5 years at best. But what comes after? Who knows? Who knows? And so that's why I was gratified, Sandra, that Chris Hedges filed that lawsuit seeking to strike down those provisions of the NDAA. I think it was, you know, I don't know what people are saying about it. I haven't seen that much in the way of tweetage, but I think it's perfectly appropriate that suit be filed, because the court has a right to pass on this stuff.
No, but that reminds me of what you're saying about John's tweet and his hashtag, what is it, ahead of the curve?
Yeah.
Because did I not say, and I don't mean to throw myself in the same conversation with Chris Hedges, but who was on this show talking about how this shit is going to be used for economic purposes?
Oh.
Me.
Yeah.
Me. Now, Chris Hedges is the first person I've seen put it in direct relief in that regard, because that's where I think, that's where I'm falling with it. You know, I think that it's like he said, they don't trust the police, so they want to be able to call the army. I mean, perfectly, just exactly what I think. I was, you know, I thought, yeah, because I'm thinking I'm going crazy here, looking at this, thinking, oh no, this shit is setting up nicely for when they're looking for food instead of shoes, you know.
Yeah, no kidding. And, you know, the idea that they've, you know, they bought the police and they still want the army in there if they need it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, I mean, I just think that you can't, you know, you can make an analysis for the whole fear and terror and security argument, but you can't not factor in the economic thing, because it's also tenuous. And did you know, another thing I noticed that was chilling last night was, I'm going to have to agree with Santorum. That fool was like, well, no, you know, the law needs to be that you can't bring up an American without due process. Now, what's really scary is that Romney agreed with Obama. So who's the front runner, and who's going to get the nomination?
Reckon we know, don't we?
We have two people now. We have the president, and we have the would-be president, who are right on board with this detained shit. So, you know, that was disturbing to me.
Well, as well it should be, and of course
he was the only one.
The other side of that coin, you know, Santorum saying the law needs to be X. The fact of the matter is, and this is where the real concern I think comes in, Sandra, the Constitution is clear on the matter. And the Constitution, at least if we're still following Marbury versus Madison, has to rule. And, you know, if you look at the habeas corpus clause of the Constitution, If you look, at the various Bill of Rights, the provisions, then there's no way that something like indefinite detention can be considered in any way anything but wholly repugnant to the Constitution itself.
Well, and so Chris Hedges is doing this using his past dealings with said groups to give him standing, right?
Right.
Okay, because I'm thinking, oh, this is really interesting. And then I just assume that that's what he's using to get in there, because they're forever shutting down everything, saying, state secrets now. When did we get state secrets? I thought that's what the Constitution was there to protect us from, because England has state secret laws. They don't have a constitution,
Precisely. Yeah, Hedges said, I spent many years in countries where the military had the power to arrest and detain citizens without charge. I have been in some of these jails. I have friends and colleagues who have disappeared into military gulags. I know the consequences of granting sweeping and unrestricted policing power to the armed forces of any nation, and while my battle may be quixotic, it is one that has to be fought if we were to have any hope of pulling this country back from corporate fascism. And I think corporate is probably superfluous there. It's just back from fascism. But there's another question for you. Is posse comitatus still in effect in this country?
Well, no, that's another thing that's been sort of blown to hell. So, as Jonathan Turley talks about, you need to see it in its entirety. Everything's talked about in isolation. And we need to look at each part of this, and we see, equals authoritarian state, not democracy. And quickly to a place that also has a few issues is Spain. They putting this judge on trial who took on Pinochet. Interesting, because he's trying to finally bring some of them assholes who screw people over under Franco. And then you think, oh shit, 1975. So Spain has always held up to be this wonderful example of a country that went from totalitarian dictatorship to democracy bloodless. It's a model they use everywhere when they want to try to move a country from authoritarianism to democracy. But if Spain is going after their judiciary, well, they're slipping very quickly back to the days of Franco. I was quite disturbed by this story. I'm like, sounds like it's completely political and they're out to destroy this judge. Newt Gingrich, he probably follow in this case.
Yeah, well, I was about to say that's right out of the Gingrich school of manhandling the judiciary, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not too sure if this is the same judge that was also going after the sort of various torture regimes of people in this country, which would also put another spin on it. But I think that might have been a Spanish prosecutor. So I'm not too sure. I'm not too sure. I know what I'm talking about on that one, but. Anyway, we got a real question about whether or not this is a democracy right now in this country, because...
Oh, there's no question in my mind. It isn't.
Well, the detaining thing, I just think, the question was asked last night, and that horrible Romney felt perfectly okay obfuscating. Didn't say shit, just some gibberish, except to align himself with... Yes, yes, yes. When I get to be president, I can't wait to get access to that power.
Well, yeah, and make sure that no kids who were brought here when they were 2 years old get to go to college or anything.
Well, no, but
that mean-spirited stuff that's just come. I mean, it's in full flower now, and how can you hear that crap, Sandra, and not just question? Well, what don't you question out of that? How can you support the kind of obvious hate that Newt and Romney and the rest of them are spewing, and call yourself an American, or say that you've got any kind of rational relationship to the Constitution, or God forbid Christianity, feed my sheep, all that business? But food stamps are bad.
Oh, no, but it's just crazy. And, even these, more moderate Republicans, they don't even know how to talk right about food stamps, because, I follow that David Frum just to see. And he's talking about, food stamps are not, are not only a black thing, and dude's thinking that, you know, he's coming across in a way that's more objective, but it's like, oh, wait, and if it was a black thing, then vilification is okay? You know what I mean? They can't
help it.
Do it, and it's just amazing to me. I don't know, was that Malloy, or was this your show talking about that woman in South Carolina talking about, oh, I'll choke myself before voting Republican?
Oh, that had to be Mike.
The black woman? I mean, I'm like, yeah, hell yeah, you know? It's just these dumb crackers who think that they're going to get somewhere voting for someone like Newt, or, God forbid, that private equity fund parasite. You know, I don't even see how anyone can vote for Romney. I mean, he's just coming out like, oh.
Well, I've been kind of wishy-washy on Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart lately, but what they're doing...
Oh, no, that shit is off the chain funny as hell. What?
calling Romney a serial killer?
Oh, yeah, and what is that pack called? America for Tomorrow?
Yeah.
Or something?
Americans for a Better Future Tomorrow.
Yeah, that shit is funny. Yeah, no, but the it really is, it just follows to its logical conclusion.
Well, and this latest ad that came out, it would be a total loss just to run the audio of it, but urging people to urge...
I mean, isn't it appropriate for what Citizens United is? It's a joke, so it might as well be taken to full effect, you know?
Yeah.
So people can see exactly what a nightmare it's turning our whole process into, you know? I mean, I shudder when the general election kicks up between whoever and Obama, because that's just going to be... I think it's going to be horrifying, you know? I don't know.
Well, I mean, we've got a pretty good idea of what's coming our way, right? I mean,
I'm scared.
Because apparently... Barack Obama, in addition to being president of the United States, has time to go out and put people on food stamps. That line is, I've heard that thing a dozen times now, and it's still driving me nuts. That Barack Obama put people on food stamps. Gee, I thought hard times did that.
Oh,
or losing a job. Or...
No, they're definitely in a fantasy world, you know. I mean, I think that, I don't know what they can do to get a win if they're running Romney. But who knows? I don't know. I just find him completely reprehensible. But maybe that's just me.
No, I don't know. I think apparently, some of the attack ads are working in South Carolina because the surveys of Republican voters indicate that people are having a continuously diminishing opinion of Romney, but that doesn't mean that they'll go into the booth and vote against him. It just means that they're coming to a little better understanding of what a sickening little predator he is.
And so, in the next, I mean, because, I mean, yeah, they pretty much predict he'll win South Carolina, but then there's, was Florida next?
Florida is right after.
And then we have to wait until, what do they have? The super, is it a whole bunch of them in
February, yeah. But what I find interesting is that South Carolina and Florida happen within a week of each other.
Yeah.
But the coverage is always South Carolina intensive.
Oh, I know. Is that because all the nasty, dirty tricks are sort of exercised there, right?
Well, I think it's not. I think it's that, but I think more than that, it's the fact that Florida has all kinds of folks of different color. And different ethnic persuasions, and thereby the weirdo cracker factor is significantly diminished. Whereas in South Carolina, you have it in all of its odious glory on display, because you got your Bob Jones University, and don't want those people holding hands with our white daughters and all of that crap.
Oh, no, I know it is. It's just, it's really, and it's also disturbing to me. It's like, I'm thinking Holden, I mean, you know, wake the hell up. They just now rolling out, standing up talking about, oh, we have to defend people's right to vote. You motherfuckers are hella late. I think they're freaking out because they're like, oh, shit, the Supreme Court is about to destroy the Voting Rights Act, you know. And they're like, oh, my God, we got to do something about it because, you know, Obama's running. So, but they're like 6 months too late.
Well, if not more.
And now, you know, that case that the Supreme Court just sort of yanked out of thin air. Well, they didn't, but they're using it. And I am in fear of what they're going to try to do to undermine the Voting Rights Act, you know, because the Texans, they have drawn some districts that are completely against the Voting Rights Act. And the Supreme Court is now going to do what? Say it's okay?
Yeah, well, I mean, come on, it's the rats, right?
Yeah, so anyway, so that's a bit of a worry that came.
I mean, I think if Texas drew up a district that or two that encompassed every person of color in the entire state of Texas and had to zigzag back and forth across sides of various streets, they'd be okay with it.
Yeah, well, no, but see, the
thing states'
is
rights.
The thing about Texas is that apparently they're looking at like a 40% increase in brown people, so they're going to have to be doing some crazy-ass drawing to try to suppress that change in demographics.
Oh, it's going to it's going to look like an Etch-a-Sketch on acid by the time they're done.
I'll let you go, but did
I was going to say, you did get a piece of email in from Andy, and this is kind of significant. He says, tell Sandra that the Spanish judge is the same judge that was investigating the Bush regime for war crimes and torture, so it's payback time.
Okay, so it is. Yeah, see, I was wondering. I'm thinking, this ain't right. Okay, well, that even makes it more disturbing, the WikiLeaks, you know?
Yeah, he says there's only one judge with the kahunas to go after both Pinochet and Bush, one in the same.
Okay.
Most judges value their life on Earth. This judge values the afterlife.
Oh, man. Well, they are going after him. There's three different cases they're trying to get him, quote, corruption. And, you know, everyone, a lot of people are just thinking it's straight up politics, but I didn't realize. If that's the case, then maybe the Obama administration is putting pressure. Oh, that's another thing I wanted to ask mention. That whole business about the U.S. pulling out of those war games in Israel,
mm-hmm. It's
so interesting that there seems to be so much going on in the background. Because, A, Obama seemed to have woken up. He's like, oh, no, bitches, you are not going to attack nobody with thousands of U.S. troops over there. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He seemed to have wised up. Or, you know, there's different ways of looking at it, but, I mean, I think it's interesting that there's some real problems between the Netanyahu administration and the Obama now. And he's thinking, oh, my God, no, I need to get elected. You are not going to drag me into this. Which would explain how the...
Well, the American troops that were there would basically be hostages, wouldn't they?
Well, and it just would be, yeah, I mean, it would just... I guess it could be problematic if all those troops are there. But on the other hand, maybe they... Yeah, I don't know. It just, you know, there seems to be more to that story than just budget concerns, that's all.
Well, without a doubt. And one last thing before you go. This business of Rick Perry being all pissed off because Barack Obama doesn't like it that we have Marines who peed all over Taliban corpses. Did you catch that business?
Yeah, he's... what in the world? Yeah.
Well, all I know is, you know, there's only one way to teach these people the meaning of their words. And you got to wonder how he'd feel if a bunch of us, you know, went and pounded down a few Foster's oil cans and started heading for the Ronald Reagan National Memorial Cathedral and Gravesite. And, because, yeah, I'd love to have an opportunity to pee on Reagan's grave. And Rick Perry says that calling such thing a criminal act, well, that shows disdain for the military. What?
Oh, he is such an idiot, that guy. Oh, did you happen to see that parody of the Herman Cain?
No.
I didn't send that to you?
I don't think so, no. I didn't see it, no.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah, I'll send it to you. It's just a takeoff on Love Train.
Oh, man.
The song. Anyway, I'll send it to you now.
Oh, Cain Train? Is that? Oh,
yeah, something like that, yeah.
Oh, I can't wait.
Women all over the world. I'll send it to you.
All right, see you, Sandra.
All right, bye.
Bye now. About 20 minutes before the hour, and moving along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, what's up, David?
I've just decided to call and talk about a few things that are currently floating in my mind.
You know, that's a good thing. If they stick around there, they can go bad, and next thing you know, headaches, who knows?
Well, the first thing I want to do is I want to give a, we have a new prophet, a musical prophet.
Yes.
Musical Jimmy Castor, who passed away. The writer of Troglodyte, Bertha Butt Boogie, It's Only Begun. One of the great funk band leaders of our
I have not. I have not been reminded of the existence of the Bertha Butt Boogie in God knows how long.
You know, it's important because there is an artist in the same way that James Brown and the Isley Brothers and in that type of vein who were self-contained as musical band leaders and band members, and they were able to make these smash hits just on the sake of their creativity and the fact that so many people, it just became such a phenomenon. And if you think about how many times that they play that Troglodyte, they're playing that Troglodyte record right now.
Somewhere.
Rocking. No, I mean the record where the funk record that's with the caveman voice and talking about.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking. Yeah.
Woman. You know, and it's playing somewhere right now on this earth. I mean, that's how significant Jimmy Castor is.
And will continue to play for eons more to come, indeed. Hey, by the way, David, I meant to tell you, you got a little email in from our buddy Tosh.
Right.
Who is disagreeing with you that it's crazy to book Van Halen and Kool and the Gang together. He said, it seems to me it kind of makes sense. All those geezers like us who listened to Van Halen partying after class went to formals and danced or jiggled near cute young ladies to the sounds of Kool. He said it was interesting noting the number of father and son combos at the Iron Maiden show at Merriweather Post Pavilion two summers ago. I was part of one of them. My eldest turned me on to Iron Maiden a couple of years back, and when no one he knew could make the show, we went, and it was a rockin' show. Same with Blue Oyster Cult. My wife, my son, and I went to Outlaw Jam 2 years back, mostly to see Blue Oyster Cult. Though my wife also wanted to see all of Bad Company, which ended up being an issue. In a field in Fredneck, Maryland, with about 10,000 bikers, it was, to say the least, says Tosh, an interesting day.
Well, you know, I've been to a lot of concerts, and I know the reaction of certain people. And when you consider disco and rock and the lines, to me, the lines are still there. I can have debates with so many people who are in hard rock about the merits of dance music, and they still don't understand how the underlying fact that rock music is dance music, you know? But they don't get that.
No, oh, no, 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 no.
And it's funny because it shows you the whole stealthiness of the whole music business and the whole world of entertainment. It's on a whole different level to make people just constantly argue about basically what was the purpose to move your body.
Well, it's Ferg and I were coming back from somewhere yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and I had the classic rock station on, and the Stones' Shattered came on.
Great record.
And I guess Ferg had never heard Shattered. Or if he had, because, I mean, he recognizes other stuff. He's like, what is this, Dad?
You witnessed an amazing moment.
Oh, yeah, I did, because, you know, there's that real funky bass line and the rhythm guitar and the lead guitar, just, well, you know, Keith.
Right.
And Ferg's in the seat, and we're driving along, and it's the car radio, and, I mean, he can't sit still. So, yeah, rock and roll is dance music, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's, and here's the thing about it. I mean, the merits of dance music and the fact that people scoff at it that comes from the I don't know, the elitists in the universities who really looked down on it and looked at it as throwaway and filler and something to that aspect, but really the whole musical embodiment of everything on this planet to me, is to make us move and to express that movement of what we hear in music, whether it's Frank Zappa or whether it's Debussy, Mozart, or Miles. And the problem is that so many people still don't get that connection, that it's all connected in forms of...
Well, yeah, just all yeah, and there's and there's a certain amount of beyond elitism that you got to remember that rock and roll was born in an era of profound bigotry when, before there was ever Elvis, Sam Phillips was recording what were called then race records.
Right.
And Elvis and Johnny Cash and Carl Perkins and the whole stable there was born out of that. The ability to translate that music over into a largely white community. And I don't think I'm too far from the historical truth on this, but the South had record burnings, and the nasty preacher played by John Lithgow in the original Footloose was not too far from reality in the South. I nearly lost my first job in radio because I devoted too much time to delivering the news of the murder of John Lennon. You know, that's 1980. You know, after rock and roll is well developed. There's a lot of elitism. I mean, I remember being a ninth grader and walking around and just could not get Tear the Roof Off the Sucker out of my head. I mean, it was just, and to this day I'll think of it and it'll turn into an earworm that lasts two or three days until I just sit and listen to it on repeat until it's purged.
Yeah.
And the same thing happens now. And there's an element of white fear in it, David, that because, you know, the parents are, well, you know, why can't they listen to something nice like Alan Jackson?
Yeah.
And that's not to take anything away from Alan Jackson or Garth Brooks. And it's not to take anything away from Garth Brooks.
Yeah.
But kids will gravitate to what makes them want to move their feet.
Right.
And it ain't all the boot scootin' boogie.
Right. You can't just go... When you get people into music, it's very rare that you can get people into... straight into like Bach and Beethoven.
I mean, no.
The problem is the immersion has to start really soon. I mean, I guess... I suppose if the parents are really extremely well-cultured and they play their baby suite after suite because they're classical musicians, I can see how it would be easy for...
I thought you were going to say Sweet's Desolation Boulevard, but I'm dating myself again.
Yeah. But the other thing, I just wanted to mention the passing of this great musical legend and the fact that, everybody used that break, It's Just Begun. When they started using that break, I mean, the vinyl skyrocketed like you wouldn't believe. And, I mean, it really resurged Jimmy Castor's career in a way where the royalties were just coming in. And
how old was he?
65.
Wow.
And
it's been that long.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing I wanted to mention just briefly before I get into the politics was... We had a murder in the United States, but it wasn't a human being. Somebody lit up the fifth oldest tree in Florida. The senator in Florida, they call it the senator. It's a cypress tree.
Oh, when was this?
They lit this weekend. They lit it up from the inside, Bob. Now think about that for a second. How sadistic do you have to be? So a fireman comes. Think about this. A fireman comes and they're like, "Oh shit, the tree's on fire," but it's from the inside, huh? What do we do about this?
Burn, let it burn.
Yeah,
that's, I mean, that's like, you know, microwaves cook from the inside out. There's no way to.
I'm interested.
There's no way to keep that hot pocket from turning into lava on the inside.
I'm interested in knowing if it's like a, you know how they say environmental arsonist. I'm interested if it's like a corporate saboteur arsonist rather than just some punk kids, because it doesn't make sense when you think about some punk kids are going to be like, yeah, let's burn the oldest tree. It seems like it's like intentional, like this tree is going
up. And it's not like the story out of Alabama last year where the rabid Alabama fan poisoned the old, what is it, Live Oat down there at Toomer's Corners in Auburn.
Right.
No, that doesn't. I think you're quite. Yeah, maybe it's.
It's sadistic. I mean, and
yeah, there you go.
Why would it? If you were a kid, Bob, if you were a kid and you were going to burn something and you were you were having pyromaniac tendencies. That sounds like a good name for a metal band. But anyways, if you were having pyromaniac tendencies, would you say, hey, you know what would be good? Let's light this tree on fire. But you know what we should do? We should light it from the inside. I don't know many kids that think like that.
No. By the way, you're getting some affirmation in from brother in the fraternity of David's, David in Tennessee. He says, well into the disco era, there was a song, wasn't disco, had a lyrical hook par excellence, shit, goddamn, get off your ass and jam, and it's still in my head. Any questions?
Yeah.
And he also says, sorry, dear friend, everything should be taken away from Garth Brooks. No, really.
Well, I do have to say the weirdest era of Garth Brooks for anyone who was really paying attention to country music at that time, and since you're a DJ, Bob, I'm sure you can agree with me, was that whole Chris Gaines shit. Amazing that the Capitol Records actually said, yeah, Garth, let's go with it. I don't know if you're familiar with the whole Chris Gaines thing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he wore the two...
Trying to forget, yes.
I mean, and then when he won Saturday Night Live, you could see the people from the side giving the side eye like, are you kidding me? Are we going to announce this guy as Chris Gaines?
Yeah, please. No, that's like... that's even dodgier than introducing Jimmy Buffett as Marvin Gardens.
Yeah, I mean, it was... And here's the funny thing about it. I mean, not to sidetrack the political discussion, but the whole thing was there was a premise about it. And this probably Capitol Records was scared. Garth was thinking, this is going to be my Purple Rain, because he wanted to make a movie around it. But obviously, no movie studio was going to go for it when they saw the returns on it. And they were like, this is not Purple Rain.
But I always wanted to be a rock and roll star.
Yeah. So, but I did want to mention the whole political thing with when you brought up Herman Cain. I found it interesting, and I would say how Bill Maher says he's not religious. I would say Bill Maher is extremely religious. He's religious to the point of bringing on uninteresting, not credible guests uncredible political guests who constantly spit deceptive talking points, and then he has the nerve to say after the Herman Cain interview, I like you.
Ooh.
I like you. And here's the funny thing. He was actually... you can't make this up, people. You can't make it up. He was actually at the premiere of this movie called Runaway Slave, and you could see in the background of him where it just had all the lettering and the fonts, Runaway Slave, Runaway Slave, Runaway Slave. And I don't know if you... Do you know anything about this movie at all?
No.
Well, apparently, you know, conservatives have money to burn. So their latest project is a documentary that they probably funneled major cash to get in the underground conservative film festivals that they're trying to build that whole narrative that the more black people need to become Republicans. So the whole narrative is that the Democratic Party is basically a slave, a plantation for the black audience.
Oh, please.
The black voters. And it's...
Oh.
I mean, they're really good at churning out that propaganda, and I found it interesting that they got Herman Cain right at the premiere, and I was looking at it, I was like, I bet you Bill Maher doesn't even know what that movie is in the background. Is there something I noticed? It was crazy. When you see the preview, you're like, oh my God, this is such propaganda on the level that, you know, that Rheinstahl and Nazi Germany and the whole Birth of a Nation. This is stuff that goes, God damn, you guys are good.
Oh, no, I think I may have the trailer for it here.
Yeah, the trailer's insane. Sandra, if you haven't checked out Runaway Slave, it's...
Okay, stand by. Let's see what we got here.
Yeah.
Oh, we got a couple of trailers.
Yeah, a couple of trailers to crap.
The hell was that noise?
The Underground Railroad?
Oh, and I'm in buffering hell right now.
Oh, well, I mean...
Oh, that's breathing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, for pity's sakes. All right, wait, hang on. I think we may have enough to work with here.
Okay.
At least, you know, before the nausea sets in.
Yeah, okay.
Are you white, conservative, fascist, black, liberal, socialist, Republican, Democrat, slave?
I'm C.L. Bryant.
Pastor, activist, former NAACP radical. For a former runaway slave, he's fitting pretty good into that 52-long suit, David.
Yeah.
He's a former runaway slave. Well, he didn't run away from the dinner table.
Wake up, America! Tell me why you're great. Is it because of our government, or is it because of your people? Run, America! Run away from socialism. Run from statism. Run away from progressivism. Who holds your liberty? Who holds your freedom?
Oh, someone's auditioning for Fox, isn't he, David?
Yeah.
You don't get our freedoms from Republicans. We don't get our freedoms from Democrats. We lend them our power.
What is this, bang a gong?
America is perhaps the greatest success story that the world has ever known. Here I am, the grandson, former slaves. I encourage Americans everywhere to run away from economic slavery and run toward the blessings of liberty guaranteed by our Constitution. So join me, America, as we travel the Underground Railroad and we seek to free ourselves from the slavery of tyranny.
Pre-1960, most African Americans were Republicans. After Martin Luther King was freed from jail by John F. Kennedy, the African American vote has gone Democratic. What exactly did we get exchanged for our 95% Democratic swaying vote? We gave up 3-to-1 odds in abortion.
14 million black babies have died since 1973.
Dependent on welfare systems.
They begin to take young women, and they begin to tell the young women, well, we will give you money, you just stay home. But what if I want to get married? You lose your benefits.
When you remove the black man out of the house, the likelihood of the young black man going to jail increases by 60%. This is what this party has given on a platter to African Americans. Sometimes you can't tell the difference between now and 200 years ago. And we, by 95%, support this.
I'm guessing a lot of people could tell the difference between now and 200 years ago. Just that whole three-fifths of a person thing. Call me crazy, David, but... Oh, this is a real... Oh, Jesus.
I'm sorry,
and I apologize to the audience, the Horn family, because I don't have the stomach to go for trailer number two. No.
Don't go to the trailer number two. But the reason why I bring that up is because I see a lot of the progressives and the liberals, and it's that constant, constant unsettling feeling that I get when people are giddy and saying the Republicans are melting down, the Republicans are melting down. I want to say, I wish I could say to all of them, I'd say, you know, when a vacuum is created in this country, and the fact that how much money they have and the bankroll that they have, all of this media that is just ready to go to hit the green light, in this vacuum, this constant propaganda, if things really do start to deteriorate in this country, the conservatives are going to have the upper hand.
Well, when don't they? I mean, in terms of messaging, in terms of money, and you know, it, mostly they motivate people by religion and bigotry and fear and hate. Those are all matches, the hot burning matches lit under a thin pair of pants.
I mean, they understand the issue with the, you have the whole issue with what was it that I was reading this week? Oh, and I was talking about how Bane, is the Bane issue inoculated? And there it is,
and they're talking about it in exactly those terms.
Right. And on the Politico blog, they had Archer Davis, former congressman, say, and he brought up the issue and he explained it. And if you look today, even today, Bob, the fact that the the operation management and budget new member is Jeffrey Zients, who was a former member of Bain Capital.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, but here's the funny thing about it.
That's a little disturbing.
You think about that, and you think about why would you want to nominate this person when you know the type of climate that is in this country regarding these financial institutions, and you basically neutralize the issue. In a sense, they're neutralizing the issue by continuing to put these wizards of finance in positions, where a lot of people would be like, why? The fact that they'll put that propaganda out on the airwaves and they'll say, oh my God, Obama is putting so many corporate members of finance in the White House cabinet. Not realizing, or not caring, I should say, that you're going to have twice as much when the GOP comes to town.
Well, you said a mouthful. That's the truth. Email coming in for you, David. Ron and Raleigh noting, oddly enough, I hadn't heard the Bertha Butt Boogie in years. However, while at work today, I put on Deep Funk out of Chicago, and lo and behold, they played the Bertha Butt Boogie. Strange synergy. I guess that's probably because of the death, right?
Yeah, probably that's because of the death, and but you never know, because as I explained, the fact that right now, in a different country somewhere, at 3 a.m. on an AM radio,
it's playing.
Yeah, it's playing. You're hearing the opening of the bass line of the troglodyte, and no matter where it is. You know it would be an interesting mashup video? Someone took the 2001 footage with the Jimmy Castor troglodyte.
Oh, that'd be funny.
That would be funny, yeah.
Let's see. Fritz writing in from Arkansas.
Yeah.
He says, I nearly forgot about the Chris Gaines era of Garth Brooks. Kind of reminds me of the old pro wrestling angle where some face, you know, the good guy, leaves the ring and returns as some sort of masked man, and everyone knows instantly it's the same guy that just left. And then David in Tennessee says, my dear brother David, please don't besmirch. Yeah, see, trained broadcaster here, can't talk. Please don't besmirch the descriptor punk. Please lay off punk as a bad adjective. Lay off punk as a pejorative. I have an earned reverence for punk. And David does, and he says, P.S., I have one Garth CD. I think the Chris Gaines CD is probably his best work. So, but then again, remember, David's the one who says everything should be taken away from Garth Brooks. Really. So, yeah, the Chris Gaines is his best work.
Well, you know, the funny thing about it is I'm told that the image, the image inspiration of how he wanted the look to be for the public, he got it from Trent Reznor and Prince, and I thought that was hilarious.
Well, you know, that does, yeah, that the Chris Gaines look is kind of a mashup of Trent Reznor and Prince, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, but I think it's hilarious that he went all
the soul patch thing going on, yeah.
Yeah, with the toupee and just everything. I mean, the fact, I would have loved to, I'm sure it's on the internet, I would like to read the script sometime on my off hours just to see what the opening scene is like. I mean,
you're a glutton for punishment is what you are.
I have to tell you, if he did make it, it would be a YouTube classic. So many people
instantaneously.
Yeah, instantaneously.
It'd be like playing Garth from Outer Space or something.
Yeah, so you're coming back on Friday or?
Oh, I'm driving back home on Saturday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because, you know, we'll wrap up the broadcast day at 6 p.m. on Friday, and then I get to tear everything down, put everything back in its road cases. Yeah, cue up drive-by truckers, road cases. There we go. I get to put everything back in their road cases and haul everything out. And no, there's no way I'm going to get on the road and drive out of D.C. at 8 o'clock at night.
Well, I guess before I sign off, I'll do this. To anyone who's interested in the Cave of Forgotten Dreams, if you email Bob your information and say, I'm interested and you're the first person, any time this week, but probably you want to do it now, you'll get your...
Well, hey, you want to make it part of a little challenge?
What's that?
Well, I mean, just make it... Yeah. If you want a copy of Cave of Forgotten Dreams and you want to kick into the ongoing operating fund,
right.
yeah,
if you want to kick into the ongoing operating fund for the Horn, go ahead and you will get your free copy of Cave of Forgotten Dreams for the first person who does that this evening, or for the first person this week. Just give Bob your contact information and say. And or he'll tell you Monday who it was or something to that effect.
Yeah, just shoot me an email with your mail-in address
and for anyone who is new to Cave of Forgotten Dreams, it's a movie you probably want in your DVD library.
Yeah, you know, I went and rewatched one over the weekend that you brought to our attention a long time ago.
Mm.
And it's still just. Mind-bending, Dolphin Cove.
Oh my God, that documentary is just it's amazing the fact that the surrealness of the fact that you have the
well you want to know the weird sort of chain of events that led me there. I read a book based on Reverbo's recommendation, a book by Haruki Murakami.
Mm-hmm.
Called Dance, Dance, Dance.
Mm.
And it's kind of, in a Japanese surreal sort of way, a Chandler-esque murder mystery, but with a lot of surrealism. And not just any surrealism, Japanese surrealism, which is different from French surrealism, really. So, central to that book is a place called the Dolphin Hotel.
Mm.
And... apparently, with the takeoff of this book, which was a huge hit, lo and behold, they started building dolphin hotels in Japan. And so, by simply trying to go back and find out a character's name from Dance, 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 which turned out to be Yuki,
mm-hmm.
there was reference to the Dolphin Hotel, which in turn there was another. It's like one of those commercials about the search engine overload. I found out the Japanese word for dolphin. Iruka. And in turn, that led to a link to the Dolphin Cove, which I watched and all over again found myself with my head in my hands. That's just the bizarreness of how things work inside my poor tormented mind.
Right. I can totally relate. I found the most surreal aspect to that was how they juxtaposed the early beginnings of the Flipper TV show with what he was doing now, and the fact that when you watch Flipper as a kid, you didn't even come to a realization. You didn't turn to your friend and say, "I wonder how the dolphins are being treated," because you just think they lived out there.
Right. Yeah. And in the same spirit, I had an email from Kate on the Front Range. Imploring me to go and check out, NPR's This American Life.
Right.
Well, they had a passage or the segment on this play about Steve Jobs and the guy who did the play, who then heard about what was going on in the Foxconn plant and went and looked into workers' lives in China who are making all of our gizmos. And Kate was really moved by it, and I understand why, because I listened to it, and it was just mind-boggling. And that, you know, and that's something I never would have found out except for the fact that there's this awesome flow of and exchange of information that takes place by virtue of this whole little process that we've established here.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's important to look at. You're creating webs within webs within webs, and you really have no idea what you're going to... indirectly or directly inspire. And that's the reason why you need networks like this continuing to sustain.
Right. And the name of that piece, by the way, Kate said, take the time to listen. This is heartbreaking and brilliant. It's called Mr. Daisy and the Apple Factory. And it comes from TAL FM, TAL.FM, which is This American Life. Mike Daisy was a self-described worshiper of the cult of Mac. Then he saw some photos from a new iPhone taken by workers at the factory where it was made. Mike wondered, who makes all my crap? And he traveled to China to find out. And then, of course, once again, lo and behold, this story broke on the Horn how many months ago?
Right. And just to tie this back to music, when you were talking about dolphins, one of the biggest dolphin activists was Fred O'Neill when he wrote the song Dolphins, and then he wrote the Midnight Cowboy theme.
Oh, wow.
Or he sang it, rather. But it's amazing how everything seems to connect from one area to the next and how it inspires in so many different areas, which is why it's so important that you inspire someone.
Indeed. David, it's good to hear from you. I look forward to talking to you again when I get back.
All right, Bob.
All right, and I'm sure you'll be there for John tomorrow night.
Yes, I will later.
All right. Thanks, David.
Bye.
Bye now. And more lines blinking if you're still there. If not, light them up. This is our last chance to talk before I get back on Monday. I'm going to take a little bit
Farewell,
of a break.
Plymouth.
Take a little break and get a little drink and dryer in a snake's belly in a wagon rut. Then we'll come back to your calls. This is The Horn. For another 5 minutes. I remember when there was lots of 8 and 9 minute rock and roll. Every young DJ knew every 8 minute song out there because, well, there's sometimes you need an 8 minute song when you're working the midnight shift. That's from the Roaring Silence, Manfred Mann's Earth Band, singing the dolphin through. Yes, the dolphin talk got to me. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
Kevin in Colorado Springs again, Bob.
Well, hey, Kevin. Glad you called back.
I was glad I called back, too, until I started listening to that trailer from that movie. And
we're all going to be runaway slaves.
Yeah, well, you took...
Running away from food.
Oh, man. Every time I get a little frustrated with the president and think there's no way I mortally can cast a vote for him in November, either the Newtster or Romney, that's Willard, I'm in favor of child labor, Romney, come out and say something that just reminds me, you know, don't waste that vote. You got to vote for some, the lesser of two evils at least.
Well, and you're gonna love this. Add Rick Perry into the mix, Kevin.
Oh yeah.
Because he and I think it was Newt and Leroy Gingrich and his big old head, they have both announced that if elected president, well, one of their number one goals would be to eliminate the National Labor Relations Board.
Yep.
Because why should working people have any sort of force of law operating even remotely in their benefit?
And what's sad about it is members of my family that were union when they were younger are going to vote for these people. That's what blows my mind.
You'd be surprised. I remember talking to a good progressive union guy who worked for the phone company a few years back, and it was back when we were just starting the horn, and he was coming in to install all the stuff. And he said, listen, he said, I go back and I pull my truck in back at the dispatch center, and he said 90% of the other trucks that are pulling in have Rush Limbaugh on their radios.
Yep.
And he said, you know, here we are, members of a union. The union protects us. The union is why we have decent wages. It's why we have health care. It's why we have a pension. And these guys run out at every opportunity they get to vote Republican.
And that's because of the propaganda for the last 34 years that you have to be a Christian and to vote Republican. And as one person asked me years ago, and that was what started getting me out of the church, is he said, how can you be a Democrat and be a Christian? And I just basically hung up on him. But, you know, that is what it is.
Kevin, I think it's time we start asking the question in the other direction.
How can you be a Republican?
How can you hate food stamps? How can you hate feeding the poor and call yourself a follower of Christ?
Exactly.
Because these right-wing so-called Christians, you know, they'll get their maiden forms all in a bunch over gay marriage,
yep,
or about being gay generally. Neither of which Jesus said a blessed, literally, word about.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to feeding the poor, he didn't mince words. He made it abundantly clear that was really high on his and God's lists of things that people ought to be doing.
Yep.
And instead, I mean, how many atheists, Kevin, how many atheists do you think were in that clapping cracker throng in South Carolina last night?
Oh, there probably was zero.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And yet it's like the Christians who were clapping over and screaming, "Let him die!" Over an uninsured sick working man.
Yep.
I could not live with that level of cognitive dissonance inside my head. It would split like an overripe melon.
But for
a right winger, no problem. No problem. We'll hate poor people and love Christ.
Yep. And I think Jesus said something about that too.
I mean,
if you love me, you'll do my works.
Yeah, feed my sheep, right?
Feed my sheep, exactly.
Well, let me share something with you real quick. This is a story out of Rhode Island, Kevin.
Uh-huh.
Now, there's a Cranston High School West there, and a student there by the name of Jessica Alquist. lovely young lady. And there was a Christian prayer mural that was on the wall in that high school. And she, Jessica Ahlquist, actually took seriously the lessons she had had about our civil society.
Yep.
And so here it is. It's in a public high school. You know, this isn't St. Cranston West High School. No. This is Cranston West High School in Rhode Island, publicly funded. And so she sued to make them take down the mural.
Yep.
And she sued in the United States District Court, federal court. And she won. And the judge, writing about it, said, "The court refrains from second-guessing the expressed motives of the committee members, but nonetheless must point out that tradition is a murky and dangerous bog. While all agree that some traditions should be honored, others must be put to rest as our national values and notions of tolerance and diversity evolve." See, there's a dirty word, huh, Kevin? Evolve.
Yep.
"At any rate, no amount of history and tradition can cure a constitutional infraction. The court concludes that Cranston's purposes in installing and more recently voting to retain the prayer mural are not clearly secular," which was the test. "Plaintiff is clearly an articulate and courageous young woman who took a brave stand, particularly in light of the hostile response she has received from her community." Now, what's that hostile response the judge is talking about, Kevin? Well, I'm going to share some of these with you. They're called from Facebook and Twitter and other social network and blog comment threads, okay? Now, remember, the people writing these comments about young Jessica Ahlquist are Christians. They are followers of the Prince of Peace, the Lamb of God. Here's Christian comment number one. "May that little evil atheist teenage girl and that judge burn in hell." Here's Christian number two. "Yeah, well, I want the immediate removal of all atheists from the school. How about that?" Here's Christian number three. "Jessica Ahlquist may have won her case, but she's going straight to hell. Hashtag God over everything." That's kind of like the belt plate that the Germans wore, isn't it, Kevin? The one that said, "Gott mit uns," God with us. Here's another Christian. "I hope there's lots of banners in hell when you're rotting in there, you atheist fuck. Hashtag Team Jesus." Here's another follower of the Lamb of God. "If this banner comes down, hell, I hope the school burns down with it." And another disciple of the Prince of Peace said, "You little brainless idiot, hope you will be punished. You have not won shit, stupid little brainless skunk." Another Christian offered the following. "F Jessica Ahlquist, I'll drop anchor on her face." And then another follower of the Prince of Peace said, "Definitely laying it down on this atheist tomorrow. Anyone else?"
Yep.
Let's see. "Let's all jump that girl who did the banner. Hashtag fuck that hoe." Let's see. Here's another saved person with a close personal relationship with Jesus Christ. "Literally, that bitch is insane. And the best part is she already transferred schools because she knows someone will jump her. Ha, ha, ha."
Yep.
Let's see. "But for real, somebody should jump this girl. LMAO, let's do it. Jess is in my bio class. She's going to get some shit thrown at her." Here's a pious one. "Hail Mary, full of grace at Jessica Ahlquist is going to get punched in the face. God's going..." Well, okay. This is a really beautiful... you know, religion sometimes, Kevin, has these really tender expressions of sentiment that reflect the common aching humanity of us all. "God's going to F your ass with that banner, you scumbag." Isn't that just touching?
It is sad. You brought up... I sent you the email story on that yesterday about Rick Perry saying Obama had disdain for the military by condemning the urinating on the troops.
Right, yeah.
And it's the same thing. What part of Prince of Peace and blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall see God?
Well, see, in the conservative Bible, it reads, blessed are the peacemakers.
Yeah. Yep. Blessed are those who urinate on their enemies, because that shows the love of God, right? And
right, and it's like these Christian sentiments exposed expressed about Jessica Alquist. This is the real number one. This is the number one Christian remark of the evening. We can make so many jokes about this dumb bitch, but who cares? That bitch is going to hell, and Satan is gonna rape her.
Yep.
Texas Betsy sent this along, and it just about made my eyeballs feel like they were burning out when I read it. Look, that's the same mindset, Kevin, and I don't do that for gratuitous purposes. I want people in this audience to hear how Christians talk.
Yep. And it would be interesting to let those people that wrote that, to show that to them on Sunday morning in their church, and read it out loud and say, did you say this? You know, but of course, there's very few preachers left who actually stand up for what Christianity is supposed to be, who would call that stuff out for what it is.
Well, and see, there's another problem that undergirds this as well, Kevin, and that is this. Let's assume that preacher you just mentioned who says, did you write this? And the person says, yeah. And the preacher says, well, what are you going to do about it?
Uh-huh.
And the person says, I'm going to ask Jesus to forgive me.
Yep.
And the preacher says, well, why don't you do that right now? And the person who wrote, you know, Satan is going to rape her in hell, says, forgive me, Jesus. And the preacher says, okay, all good now, you're done.
Well, I would say they're missing the point of forgiveness. It's kind of like I just found out a friend of mine died. And I haven't seen this person for 30 years, but I hurt them really bad back when I was a kid. And I asked them for forgiveness for how bad I had hurt them back then. But I had no idea until, say, 20 years ago, how much forgiveness really means. It's like the old AA adage, you make amends. Only, and you don't try to make amends only in the case where it may hurt a person more to try to make amends. And that's what true forgiveness is. You don't just say, I'm forgiven.
Well, but there's also a condition.
Assume that,
if I understand it correctly, Kevin, there's a condition precedent to forgiveness. Is there not?
Yep.
And is that not repentance?
Repentance? And in the AA traditions, you write out all those things that you've done to hurt your family or friends or whatever, through whatever particular disease you have, or alcoholism, whatever. And you write those things out, and you go back to each person. Now, I've got to be honest and say I've never tried to do that completely. But there is something more than just you. You can't just say I'm forgiven and then go on continuing to do the same things. If that were the case, I guarantee you 50% of those that are in the Republican Party now would get the hell out, because they couldn't live with themselves. You know? I should say 50% of those who are making comments like that about someone would have to turn away from doing that. And it's really sad. It's that video or that trailer drove me nuts, because that guy that was talking mentioned the 1920s. Well, good Lord. You know, any black person alive should remember how bad it was from 1865 to 1970. You know? And it's just sad to watch the propaganda machine mill this stuff out. And meanwhile, there's a small group of us that are trying to fight for peace, justice, and truth, and it's getting washed away by propaganda. And how you fight that, I don't know.
Well, I think it has to. I think the first place to start is to denounce it. Let me share a little something with you that I just got from Lottie, our chat room moderator. This is an anonymous comment from January 13th, 2012. And it says, one of the things that really irritates me is when an atheist will post examples of self-professed Christians acting hatefully, and then a second group of self-professed Christians jump up and start howling that the atheists are misrepresenting Christianity because the first group of self-professed Christians aren't real Christians. You know, real in caps. And the commenter goes on and says, to the second group of self-professed Christians, please stop yelling at us that the first group is not made up of real Christians. You go tell them they aren't real Christians and see what kind of response you get. It is not the job of the atheist to decide who is and who is not a Christian. As far as we're concerned, neither of you are right about what God wants because we think God doesn't exist. You know, atheism. Given that simple fact, it makes no sense for us to say you're more correct in your interpretation of the divine than they are because you're both wrong. If you don't like a group of hateful people making Christianity look bad, you gotta tell them to stop it. Because you know what? The right-wing fundamentalist Christians never hesitate to say exactly that, Kevin, about Muslims.
Yep.
Yeah, well, they're not doing enough to denounce terrorism.
Well, even better, Bob, if the Muslims said that about them, they'd be all up in arms. Oh, you can't say that about us. You can't talk about us that way. And we do it every day as a nation. Talk bad about the Muslims and run them down.
Well, look at this latest lunatic comment from Rick Perry.
Yeah. Well,
you know, he
just wants to get it in people's minds that Obama has disdain for the troops. That's all he's wanting.
Well, but there's
that's
that.
All he cares about.
There's that, Kevin, and then there's more, because after the pageant last night, or at the pageant last night, Perry said that Turkey is, quote, a country that is being ruled by what many would perceive to be Islamic terrorists.
Yep.
Now, I mean, that's not even remotely true. Not even close to true. And so a columnist for a newspaper in Turkey today called Rick Perry an idiot.
Yep.
But you know, he doesn't care because, and he was given a chance, he went on Wolf Blitzer, who, you know, oh, Wolf really roughed him up, who said, would you like to take it back? And Rick Perry said,
no. Well, I'm hopefully seeing some stirrings of Occupy starting back up again, and that's...
Well, I'm sure you're aware of the story about the Occupy folks being thrown off the bus in Texas over the weekend, right?
No, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, apparently one cannot be a member of Occupy and ride Greyhound bus lines.
Oh, well...
Because some cranky old bus driver threw, what, 13, 19 Occupy folks off of his bus in the middle of Texas for no good reason except for the fact that they identified with Occupy.
Yep. Well, American freedom of speech, right? You know, we believe in the Constitution as long as the Constitution is for us, but if it's for them other people over there, no, they ain't got that right.
No, that's our Constitution, not their Constitution.
That's right. And, I wish I'd heard. Well, do you know what part of Texas it was in?
I don't have the story right in front of me, but I'm sure somebody will tell me.
Because there's a route that goes from Denver through here to Texas, the same driver, up until they get to a certain point in Texas. And I have had opportunity to take Greyhound up to Denver and back numerous times, and I'm thinking I might know just which driver you're talking about.
Cranky old dude?
Yep.
Yeah, this was a cranky old dude, and they were switching drivers or whatever in Texas, and the guy, you're not getting on my bus. So,
well,
yeah.
That might mean some occupying of Greyhound might need to take effect there.
Texas Betsy letting me know it was in Amarillo.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought. I know which driver it is. I don't know him by name.
Well, the person, the occupiers that I saw interviewed referred to him as being really, really old and questionable as to whether he should be behind the wheel.
Yep.
The driver's name is Don Ainsworth.
Yep.
And it's the Phoenix to Oklahoma City route.
Hmm. Well, may not be the same one then, but I can't. Now, you would think he'd have to radio in the dispatch. Cause they can throw you off the bus if, say, you try to light a cigarette on the bus. But you would think he would have to radio in the dispatch and say, I'm doing this because, and usually they'll call out the police on top of throwing the person off the bus. Now, one wonders if he bothered to call dispatch and say, I'm throwing 30 people off the bus because they're Occupy members. You know, it just...
Well, if you do a search for Occupy, Greyhound, thrown off bus, you'll find the complete details.
Well, I wonder if he's really happy to have constitutional rights when he gets arrested for doing that. I'm sure there's some law about dropping people off in the middle of nowhere for no good reason, particularly when they identify themselves as a political organization and you don't agree with their politics. I mean, you're putting people's lives at risk by dropping them off in the middle of nowhere, for one.
Yeah.
But people just need to call up Greyhound and complain. That's one start to it. And then eventually Occupy will get around to occupying the Greyhound bus terminals. I mean, we've got to take this country back. There's no doubt in my mind that the less we sit on our hands and feet, the better off we're going to be. And, you know, people, I know it feel, I get that way, I feel that way a lot, like it's overwhelming, but we've got to stand up for what we've got left and stop these laws like the NDAA. I wanted to mention that too, because there's another bill that's came out called the Enemy Expatriation Act. And it basically says that, you as an American citizen, if you're determined to be a, quote, terrorist, they can take away your citizenship. Now, how scary is that?
Oh, that's plenty scary.
Yes. And, like I said, President Obama, I'm going to vote for you, but I'm sorry, when it came to that signing statement with the NDAA, Mr. President, I don't trust anybody. I don't care if you put a signing statement on there or not. If it wasn't written into the law, it ain't there. And
well, the best thing that could happen would be for this thing to be overturned in the Supreme Court. But I don't know if I trust the rats, you know, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia. I don't know if I trust them to do that. This may be just fine by them.
Well, you can hope that one of them, five of the nine on there, will have a conscience to overturn it. Because it's so plainly written to me is to say that someday, maybe not this president, but someday some president's going to say, these Occupy protesters are terrorists. Let's round them up. And people, that's no different.
Or, where a Republican is concerned, Kevin, anybody not aligned with the status quo.
Exactly.
Folks down in the Coal River Valley that I'm very close to and consider dear friends and colleagues have been referred to by the coal industry as terrorists.
Yes.
When, you know, the coal industry is the one that's using nearly 4 million pounds of the same high explosives that were used to blow up the Murrah Federal Building every day in West Virginia alone, not counting Kentucky, southwestern Virginia, or Tennessee.
Yep.
Every day. But the coal companies aren't the terrorists. The people who are trying to stop the bombing are the terrorists. I mean, do you see this? In some entirely dystopian, not too distant future, anybody who is not with the status quo could wind up being called a terrorist if they haven't been already. The follow up on the Greyhound story, this is what Raw Story reports: a group of people were on their way to Washington D.C. to participate in the Occupy Congress protest that was scheduled for today. They were thrown off the Greyhound bus Saturday night and left stranded in Amarillo, Texas. The driver, Donald Ainsworth, allegedly called the occupiers, "You people," and told them they were not welcome in Washington or anywhere else. According to an account posted at Reddit, Donald Ainsworth immediately began yelling at all passengers in the lobby. Once he realized 13 passengers were with Occupy, he began making personal and rude comments toward members when boarding with tickets. No one responded. Once the bus was boarded, he began shouting, "Sit down and shut up! Anyone standing's getting kicked off the bus!" Several passengers, not just occupants, began addressing the driver's conduct. He left the bus and locked all passengers within it for over an hour. He made a lengthy phone call, and before too long, the police had arrived. The officer came on the bus and spoke with us, stating he knew Don's attitude was poor, but he had the right to remove us.
So Mr. Ainsworth is the sole decider of what's right and wrong in America, apparently.
Well, here's what happens. The cop and the driver then walk through the bus together, and Ainsworth asks every passenger, "Are you with Occupy?" 13 people said yes. The police officer ordered them off the bus, and then Ainsworth said, "Anyone else support Occupy? You can get off, too."
Yeah, I don't know. Well, what we need is a good progressive bus driver to throw all those Republicans off the bus next time.
Well, hear, hear.
They'll understand what it feels like to be treated as a minority. I mean, you know, you don't have to go too far back. 40 years ago, MLK and the people marching with him were called terrorists, in essence, for what they were doing.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it angers me so much that it appears, anyway, so many people are unaware of what's happening to our country. You know, just a basic tenet. You know, when they did that trailer, that guy speaking mentioned something about the Constitution, and I thought, what Constitution? Where's the Constitution? And that apparently is what's happening. You know, we're just disregarding that police officer was aiding and abetting Mr. Ainsworth by forcing the Occupy people off. That's a violation of their civil rights. And I'm sure somebody will sue over it, but that doesn't help you getting to Washington.
Well, isn't that discrimination based upon their politics?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, what if we went into a limousine and said, you know, all you hedge fund managers, get out?
Yep.
I'm sure they'd have the money to go hire a lawyer and sue our butts off.
Yep.
Kevin, it's awful good talking to you. I look forward to talking to you again. Of course, won't be able to do that for a few days now. Going to be on the road.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to tomorrow. I haven't heard John Fox before. Of course, every time you say John Fox, I think of the coach out here of the Broncos. And I'm thinking, gee, that would be interesting.
Oh, but I don't think that wouldn't work at all. I lose all sense of rationale and reasoning, and that little fundamentalist Tebow makes me crazy.
Well, you know what would be interesting is if Tebow came out and spoke out against some of this madness. Do you realize how quickly his popularity would go away? They would lynch him if he came out and said, "This is wrong." That's what we've come to. You know,
yeah. You said if Tim Tebow came out, and I was thinking entirely something different.
Well, that would be even more interesting.
Well, I think eventually that'll happen.
Gosh, I could only imagine what would occur here in Colorado if Mr. Tebow came out of the closet. Well, that's a good thought to end the conversation on, Bob.
All right, you have a wonderful evening.
Hey,
take care, Kevin.
Good break.
All right, bye now. Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Let's see, about a quarter before the hour. A couple of weird stories out there, just to sort of wrap things up. This is the kind of thing where you go, what? It's almost like seeing the poisonous hatred of the right wing spread to its illogical extreme. A man by the name of David Haddad, who is 50-some-odd years old and lives in the New York City area, has been arrested for hate crimes. He's Jewish. He's been arrested for hate crimes for making anti-Semitic phone calls to his mother and her elderly friends and painting swastikas on their doors. Now, do we automatically just say, oh, well, yeah, this guy's crazy? Or is there something weirder at work? I honestly don't know. But it's just a... it's a threat too far. It's just... And apparently it has something to do with a business dispute. But this is... I guess this has been one of those ahead-of-the-curve nights. I saw this story from Agence France-Presse. And I could almost swear that a few months ago when we were talking about the creeping austerity programs, not even creeping, it's running at full tilt now in Greece, I could almost swear that we talked about this very thing. Headline, Ancient Greek Sites, by the way, to Dr. John in New York, sit down, that you're not going to be okay. Dr. John is an archaeologist. Ancient Greek sites could soon be available for rent. I'll let that sink in for a second. Brought to you by Carl's Jr. In a move bound to leave many Greeks and scholars aghast, Greece's culture ministry said Tuesday it will open up some of the debt-stricken country's most cherished archaeological sites to advertising firms and other ventures. They're going for that ancient history dollar. That's a good dollar. Bill Hicks, peace be upon him. The Ministry of Culture is calling it a common-sense way of helping facilitate access to the country's ancient Greek ruins, and money generated would fund the upkeep and monitoring of sites. The first site to be opened would be the Acropolis, the Acropolis, the high city. According to a ministerial briefing dating from the end of December, a commercial firm could rent the Acropolis for a professional photographic shoot for as little as 1,600 euros a day. That's $2,046. Demonstrators could also rent the ancient landmark. I don't think we mean by demonstrators protesters. The story notes, Greece needs every euro it can get. The country's public coffers are drained, and the nation is struggling to avoid a historic debt default in March. Well, maybe, you know, there's been an ongoing debate for literally a century now over whether or not Britain has the right to continue to hang on to what are referred to as the Elgin Marbles. The beautiful pieces of statuary that were literally looted from ancient from Greece, stealing the ancient Greek patrimony and taken back to a museum in the UK. For decades now, Greece has said, you know, give them back. They're not yours. You stole them. And the UK has said, well, that's right, we did. When we stole them fair and square. So, is it, but really, Greece needs the money to take care of its, of the precious patrimony that it holds in trust for the world, because it is the world's patrimony. But does anybody have any lingering hopes? That money will do anything but service debt? Advertising? Really? What? On the Acropolis? the place where perhaps Pericles gave his funeral oration, the place where audiences sat in stunned horror at the God-given misfortunes of Oedipus and his mother, wife, Jocasta, that saw the weeping of Antigone for the bones of her dead brothers laying unburied and unconsecrated on the battlefield, the perfidy of Creon. And it's all for rent. Socrates says when he travels, he carries American Express. There's something about a story like that that just really a blinking neon light on a set of Doric columns that says "Eat at Joe's," or maybe some, no. What am I talking about? Maybe some golden arches. After all, the Greeks gave us the arch, didn't they? Or was that the Romans? No, it was the Greeks. Here at the Home of the Arches, we wanted to tell you about our dollar menu. And don't forget a mango pineapple smoothie. Too much. Andy writing in, he says, Governor Rick Perry, the idiot, I love it. I heard the comments from the Turkish government today regarding Rick Perry. Man, it made me laugh. We must be the laughingstock of the international community today. No one, not in any way, shape, or form, should you take anyone or anything seriously from a right-winger out of Texas. They're certifiably insane. What a blight and embarrassment Governor Rick Perry is to our nation. The idiot. That's his new name, the idiot. By the way, Randall writing in, he says, writing in from PA, he says, a default, Greece's magic date is March 20th, or maybe we should call that the drop-dead date. A default by Greece on March 20th may trigger massive credit default swap derivatives. Here we go again. How's that curse go? May you live in interesting times. Yeah, or then again, considering the reality on the ground in Greece, maybe just a big banner, as Andy suggests, flying above the Acropolis, brought to you by Goldman Sachs. Darlene, here's another ugly who has reared his head again, figures, can't wait to see what damage Lieberman will do when he finally leaves Congress and gets that plum lobbying assignment. Now, he's going to work for the pharmaceuticals industry, Darlene. Don't worry. Motion Picture Association of America calls blackout protest a dangerous gimmick. The MPAA, of course, wanting badly for SOPA to pass, the Stop Online Piracy Act, that actually stands the very real possibility of breaking the Internet. Oh, you broke the Internet. The Motion Picture Association of America, the film industry's largest lobby, is not happy about the growing opposition to two anti-piracy bills being considered by the U.S. Congress. Critics of the bills have said they could break the fundamental structure of the Internet and result in censorship. Internet-based companies like Google and Yahoo oppose the bills, saying they would put U.S. tech policy on a par with China, Malaysia, and Iran. The Protect IP Act and the Stop Online Piracy Act in tandem, they could make this show go away. No kidding. And tomorrow, a lot of websites are going dark in protest of these things. The MPAA just says, it's a gimmick. A so-called blackout is yet another gimmick, albeit a dangerous one, designed to punish elected and administration officials who are working diligently to protect American jobs from foreign criminals, said Christopher Dodd. It is our hope that the White House and the Congress will call on those who intend to stage this blackout to stop the hyperbole and PR stunts and engage in meaningful efforts to combat piracy. Because after all, if we don't have lobster for lunch morning, noon, and night, what the hell is it worth living for? Indeed, Darlene, I share your sentiment. Yuck. And one last story. This will be hasty. Won't take long. You ever want a poster child for the 1%? I give you 76-year-old finance CEO John K. Castle. Yeah. He's a hedge funder. He went to dinner at the posh Club Colette in Palm Beach, Florida on Saturday night a couple of weeks ago. And he became enraged when the waiter brought the bill. He became so enraged that he grabbed his 54-year-old waiter's left hand and began twisting his fingers while Castle's wife sat watching at the table. He shouted at Mr. Kuchik, the waiter, "You schmuck! Why did you bring the bill to the table?" Mr. Kuchik's left ring finger was broken. Castle heads the New York-based private equity firm Castle Harlan Inc. One percenters behaving badly. The next time you hear from me, it'll be noon on Thursday. I don't know, maybe I'll try to call into John's show tomorrow evening, depending on how things are going. But I hope you will tune in to the Families USA Conference. Rick Smith, James, and I will all be broadcasting, so that means a solid 9 hours of horn broadcasting Thursday and Friday. I think it will be informative and that you will enjoy it. Thanks for everybody who helps out to keep all of this going. Your contributions are needed and appreciated. $10 at a time, we can pull together the thrifty $250 and make independent media continue to be viable. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. Thank you for the one kind contribution this evening. You know who you are. Thanks to everybody who makes all this go. You with your ideas, your phone calls, your emails, your chat room participation. Thank you to, of course, our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky, to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, to our blogger, Texas Betsy Reverbo, as our op-ed columnist. My head writer is David in Tennessee. John Fox will be filling in tomorrow night. You'll know all about John Fox if you've never heard him before tomorrow evening. And thanks, of course, to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And always, thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.